Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for Easter Sunday and our fourth anniversary, 2011. Man that's been with us since the very first show, welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, and Tim, I don't know if you saw the front page of the AJC. They said that about 122,000 disappeared from Atlanta. And that's not good news, but we do have good news. One of those people is not Catherine Smith. And from Atlanta, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, everyone.
Yes. Well, it's hard to believe it's been 4 years since we started doing this. I guess if we start thinking of Sunday after Sunday, we might get there. But I don't know if I seem 4 years older. How about y'all?
Oh, no, I'm four years younger. I go back in time.
Well, that's good to hear then. Yeah, well, a good show today, besides just being a nice Easter Sunday. James Protzman of Blue, North Carolina, is going to join us any minute and tell us all about North Carolina, which, of course, is a battleground state, a state with a governor's election, a state that I believe will gain a congressional district. And then they also are hosting the DNC convention in 2012. So if you want to talk about exciting southern states for politics, North Carolina fits the bill, so it'll be good to have James on to tell us all about that. And then, of course, we have just a whole host of topics to talk about. And until James comes on, because it'll be here in the first part of the show, I believe, let's go ahead and talk about the map, if you will. And then when he comes on, we may talk about it on both sides. But, Catherine, you posted on this map that Larry Sabato, professor at University of Virginia, still keeping it southern, put out as he sees it, states that are safely Democratic, lean Democratic, toss-up states, lean Republican, safe Republican. He may even have seven categories. What about that map struck you, Catherine, as correct and wrong?
Well, I don't know if it was correct or wrong, but I was pleased to see that Georgia wasn't, you know, blood red like it usually is. So I thought that was encouraging. I think, you know, that big dark swath, red swath across the country is a little discouraging, but, you know, we still have strength in the coasts and along the north, Midwest, you know, the northern, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota is still, you know, at least leaning or likely D. So, you know, it looks like there's, what, 2, 4, 6, 8, up in the air states, which is good. I think Colorado is probably good for Democrats. Nevada will be interesting now that Ensign has resigned. That will remains to be seen if that continues to be a pale yellow toss up. But you know, I know how I am. I like to wait until people vote to draw conclusions, but I think it gives us a good way to start forming strategies for winning in 2012. So I think that's a good thing.
Yes, and there's probably two more maps that matter a little more than Larry Sabato's, even though this is the one we have public, and that would be the one that's at the Obama campaign and the one that's at the RNC or whoever, one of the top Republican contenders, because they probably have their own view. And since they control the money that'll get spent, that'll impact this a lot, those probably count just a little more than this one, but this one's what we have to discuss. Tim, what stuck out to you about it, both right and wrong?
Well, the first thing that I found a little worrisome is that every state he listed as a toss-up, nine of them, was carried by the president in 08. No state that were Republican or toss-up. I'm not really worried about that dark red swath across the midsection of the country. If you go west to east, you can count the electoral votes of 11 of those states, and it equals California.
Yeah, that's true.
I am a little surprised that Colorado is listed as a toss-up, considering the fact that last year, even in a big Republican year, Colorado did okay with the Democrats. I would think we would be doing a little better than toss-up status there. And I'm frankly surprised that a state like Indiana is listed as a toss-up state. I thought it would revert back to its red form. And by the way, David, North Carolina does not gain a congressional seat.
Yes, and that's a good point to stop at, because James Crossman will probably would correct us if we said such an incorrect statement when he comes on, and he is actually on the line from Blue, North Carolina. James Crossman, welcome to the Kudzu Vine.
Hey there. Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes, thank you for coming on. I'm David McLaughlin. You're also on with Catherine Smith and Tim Shiflett. And tonight we're just going to change things up a little bit and let ladies go first. And Catherine's going to have a question or two, and then we're going to just pass it around so we can all get some North Carolina intellect.
Hey, James, thanks for being on tonight, especially on Easter. We really appreciate it. We know that it's a big family day, and it's sometimes hard to get away, so we appreciate that. It makes it a little easier that you just call in. You don't have to go anywhere. That makes it
easy.
That's
great. Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your blog. I'm the co-publisher or whatever of Blog for Democracy, which is a blog here in Georgia that talks about progressive politics, and we've noticed, and I was just wondering, we've been talking about this a lot lately, me and my blogging cohorts, that we're noticing a real slowdown in traffic, but an uptick in Twitter and Facebook and sort of like a lot of links coming back to our blog from those sources, but not a lot of commentary necessarily on the blog. And I was just wondering if you're experiencing any of that kind of thing, or if you have a different experience now that with all the social media and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, what you've described sounds familiar. It feels familiar. Our metrics are pretty stable. I mean, during the election, we were up, way up, of course, but on a typical week, we have about, well, I'd say on average, roughly about 4,000 unique visitors a week. And the thing that's changed is we're keeping the same traffic, but we're seeing less commenting. And we're seeing a lot more hashtags. We made up our own BlueNC hashtag earlier this spring, and it's been flying. It's really, and we actually now have a Twitter feed on our homepage, so it's just another angle for, you know, grabbing eyeballs, and it seems to be working. I regret that it may be suppressing discussion, but, you know, people are busy.
Yeah, and now do you have a Facebook page too?
Our homepage feeds Facebook automatically, but we have almost no activity. I don't even go to Facebook. My life is... That's one thing too many for me.
I understand that completely. Because we, I actually know, I've noticed in the last couple of weeks that we get comments on our Facebook page sometimes more than we get on our actual blog. So I don't know what that means. I mean, I don't really have an explanation for it. I'm just glad, you know, it concerns me that there isn't as much discussion as there used to be. I mean, I'm willing to take some of the blame for that. I don't think our content is as fresh and regular as it used to be, because we're all, you know, on Twitter and on Facebook, and
right.
You know, our attention is being drawn from other things. Anyway, I also wanted to ask you about. I mean, I have to assume now that the announcement was made that the convention is coming to Raleigh. Is that right, Raleigh?
Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Yep.
That do you have a pretty strong party in North Carolina? Is your, you know, sort of party infrastructure pretty strong so that you're going to be able to, you know, sort of support the onslaught? Or is that really not, has that not seemed very important to the whole convention discussion?
I think they're largely unrelated, but the answer to the first question is yes, the party is regrouping. got a great new chair, a guy named David Parker. He just hired a new executive director. They're doing the right stuff, stepping up the activity, a little bit of a clean slate kind of, you know, we got our asses kicked. It's time to regroup. You know, I'm sure, see, I'm not an insider. I'm a progressive in North Carolina, so that means you're sort of, by definition, you're not an insider. And so, you know, I'm not on the inside of all the discussions, but as an observer, it looks to me like the party's getting its act together nicely, that it's plugging in appropriately to what's going on in Charlotte. Just there's been a lot of noise, a lot of discussion, a lot of chitter, just a little bit, a lot of buzz, but I'm not aware of exactly what that means in terms of, you know, operating model or, you know, alliances or collaboration. I don't know. But my guess is the party's going to step up really big. The other thing is that Charlotte, even though it's in North Carolina, it's also Charlotte. And, you know, it's got its own profile. It's in the state, sort of. It's right on the border of South Carolina. And you know, it sort of does its own thing in North Carolina. So it'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds. There's been a lot of buzz trying to, you know, bloggers trying to get seats at the table, and it sounds like that's going to happen. So.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess they made a big effort for that in Denver, too. There was a lot of...
Yeah. It feels like it was one of the first things that sort of popped up here is, okay, we got to make sure that we got all the bases covered, including the blogging community.
Well, that's good. Well, that's really all I had to ask you about, but I know Tim has some riveting questions, so I'll pass it over to him. Thanks a lot.
Well, not sure about the riveting part,
but I do have some riveting.
James, thank you for being on with us tonight. I wanted to ask you a couple of general questions about redistricting up there, because that's going to be a hot subject all over the country this year. And since North Carolina did not gain a congressional seat this go-around, and since the Republicans now control the legislature, is it reasonable to assume that most of the redistricting action might be concentrated on the legislative districts instead of the congressional districts?
You know, this is we're coming into paybacks or hell time. You know, the Republicans for years, you know, screamed from the forest, these districts aren't fair, we need an independent redistricting commission, and the Democrats, much to my dismay, basically blew them off and said, you know, tough tomatoes, we're doing it our way, we're in charge, and now they're in charge. And so they are licking their chops, they're eager to disrupt, they'll be successful to some extent. I predict never-ending litigation, which is just the natural consequence of any redistricting effort for as long as the different parties can sustain legal challenges, and, you know, it'll be a mess. They Republicans did agree with Democrats that in 10 years from now that it would be really neat if we had independent redistricting, but we're too busy and don't have time to do that right now. Is their party
line? Yeah,
right. So, you know, it's hypocrisy 101. It happens both ways, and it's tough to be on the short end of that stick.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, in North Carolina, the governor there does not get a veto of redistricting plans. Well, doesn't that pretty much then just leave the Republicans in charge of the process?
Oh, yeah, it absolutely does. You know, we've got depending on whose survey you're looking at, we have institutionally the weakest governor in the country. That's less true now, but we have a historically weak governor, not the person, the office, in terms of powers. And this is one where we're just going to get rolled, and, you know, it's just how it is.
Yeah, and one final little question is: a guy we keep talking about and asking about down here is Heath Shuler, and we know he's in a classic swing district and that he's a blue dog.
is his district the type of district that the Republicans might want to tweak a little bit to see if they could bump him off?
You know, anybody who listens to me on this would be, let me say this another way. I'm not the right person to listen to on this. However, Heath is might as well be a Republican, and running at him from the right in that district, I think, is a losing proposition. So my guess is, you know, that guy, for better or for worse, and most days I say worse, I think he's in a pretty solid position. You know, Asheville is a city unto itself outside of his district, but they just don't have enough population there to really swamp the elections. And so there's just a lot of rural mountain counties, and you know, they don't want anything even remotely resembling a progressive Democrat, and that'll just never happen. Heath's about as far as they would go, and fortunately for him, you know, he's a Republican too, at least in terms of how he votes. So I think he's in pretty solid condition unless he does something sort of blazingly stupid.
Okay, thank you, sir, for answering all those questions on redistricting, and I'm sure David has a few more questions for you, right, David?
Oh, I do, because we got more topics. Well, a lot of your Democratic incumbents that were in tougher districts, like Heath Shuler, survived. One that did not was Bob Etheridge. Now, there was a little web video that showed him kind of having a little bit of altercation from some Republican activists. What's the chances that district goes back Democratic, being a presidential gubernatorial year, either with Bob Etheridge or another Democrat?
Here's my gut instinct on that, is that if it's not Bob, and I have no idea if he's even remotely interested or not. I just have no idea. He's doing other things these days, but he may have his eye on it. But if it's not him, I don't see another Democrat coming from out of nowhere. And it's a very conservative district, and I think that's going to be a hard one to win back for anybody. But he might be able to do it. I just don't think anyone else could right now.
Yes. Now, of any of these other districts, be they held by Republicans or Democrats, are there any other districts that are possible swing districts that either have to be defended or gone after?
Well, the word on the street is, and I don't know whether it's, you know, just baloney or whatnot, but there's the latest buzz is the easiest district to reconfigure gerrymander for Republican victory is the district that's held by Brad Miller, which includes Raleigh, and so you know, just to say it with enough careful carving, at least one district is going to be set up to be a Republican pickup. I it's hard to imagine that they couldn't figure that out, and so that's what they'll figure out. Whether they can get more than one's a different question, and I think that's just a matter of creativity and map drawing.
Yes. Well, I mean, that'll be interesting to watch, with the fact that, like Tim was saying, there's no new districts. Unless there's been population shifts, the Republicans would have to maneuver things very blatantly to change the configuration.
Right.
Well,
right.
We're talking about the weak governor. Oh, go ahead.
Let me just say, they will manipulate things very blatantly. These guys, you know, we had some tornadoes here last week. Those tornadoes are nothing compared to what the Republicans are doing in the legislature. I mean, it is the most destructive storm I can imagine happening to North Carolina, and they have not the slightest concern for what they're wrecking, and whatever they have to do what they want to do, they're going to do it.
Well, Democrats in Missouri, Wisconsin, Georgia, and probably many other states that have seen them take over would probably agree with you and completely empathize. Well, you were talking about the weak gubernatorial system in North Carolina, and you have a presidential year gubernatorial race, which is pretty uncommon, not as many of those as there are on the other years. You have an incumbent running.
What are the chances that Beth Perdue survives? Because right now the polls show her anywhere from double digits to high single digits behind in the polls.
Yeah, I think she's got a, really tough race ahead of her, and I'm glad to say she's finally doing the right things to distinguish herself from the person who's most likely to be her opponent, whose name is Pat McCrory. And she's got a tough road. She's having to veto just about everything that comes across her desk, and you know the progressives in North Carolina are encouraging her to do it more and loudly, just in order to show what is standing between chaos and any sort of moderate civilization. Is she's the one standing there. And so I think she's heading in the right direction. The presidential dynamics are going to swamp everything else. I mean, that, you know, this is just how it is. And so her success will be, you know, sort of fundamentally tied to how strong Obama is in North Carolina and how much energy he puts in North Carolina. And I'm expecting it'll be a lot.
Yes, well, I guess that kind of dovetails into the next thing. North Carolina is listed as a battleground state. It was a battleground state last time and won by Democrats, the first time in many elections cycles that I can remember. And so this time it's pretty obvious when the city was or the state was picked to host the Democratic convention that it would be a battleground. How do you think this is going to play out?
Well, I hope it doesn't rain on election day. You know, it's turnout, and turnout. And here's the problem we've got is we've got a legislature right now that is hell-bent on passing photo voter ID requirements that would in any other state where this happens would guarantee to suppress the traditional Democratic voters who are less well-off financially, racial minorities, rural
seniors.
Democrats. Pardon me?
Seniors.
Yes, seniors who don't have a driver's license and now have a poll tax associated with getting a voter ID. So they're going to jam that through. That's going to end up in court hopefully it'll be tied up and not in place for any elections that we have to worry about anytime soon. So that's a big giant thing. The other things that are on the table is bills I've heard about. I haven't seen them yet, but proposals that would shorten the early voting period, make it less convenient for people to vote. And also change the hours that early voting could happen, and you know all of which would have the result of suppressing voting. So, you know, you got that on one hand, and then hopefully you've got an Obama army on the other hand, pushing for straight Democratic voting, because that's what it's going to take for Governor Perdue to win, is to stay strong with her vetoes and get really tight with the Obama campaign and drive it home that way.
Yes, I mean, that would be a critical state because I think I've seen some maps that, like, if Virginia and North Carolina are Democratic, they equal what Florida is. Then you put Florida with it. I mean, the map just becomes so much tougher because the new map, if you will, with states like North Carolina in play, then it just makes the calculus for Republicans that much tougher. And usually conventions being in a state help some, although obviously, for instance, Minnesota, that didn't get John McCain elected in that state. So it's not always foolproof, but I certainly wish you the best of luck with it being in your state.
It's hard to say. I think it depends on what the strategy playbook looks like for the party at the state level as well as the Obama campaign, how they use it, how they leverage it. But if it's just a party that happens in isolation as an event, I don't think it makes much difference no matter where it is in North Carolina. But I think it especially doesn't make much difference because it's in Charlotte, and as I've said a couple of times, Charlotte is sort of a world unto itself, and stuff that's happening in Charlotte, most of North Carolina doesn't really think that it's happening in North Carolina.
Yes. Well, James, we always like to have our state blogger guest and leave him with this question. Is there anything else going on in the state politically that we should know about?
Well, I think it's the same stuff you're seeing in every state. We're fighting on multiple fronts to preserve whatever little gains we may have gotten. We're environmental dismantling is rampant right now. It's really frightening, and it's every day there's a new insult. The other big area, which is one of my main areas, is also reproductive rights, abortion rights, choice. We have the Tar Heel Taliban in charge, and it's a daily assault on women in this state, and it just shocks me that so many women vote Republican. I mean, I just look at them and think, what are you thinking? Because, these guys are Stone Agers.
Yeah. It sounds so familiar.
Yeah.
That's what's going on in Georgia, too.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. We talk about Georgia and North Carolina being two of the most similar states in the South to each other. Now, when y'all have a Democratic governor and voted for a Democratic president 2 years ago, we look at you with a little jealousy because we're not quite there yet. But, James, we thank you for coming on the show, and we hope you come back again as things continue to unfold in North Carolina, and we'll continue to read Blue North Carolina. And feel free to let everybody know that you were on the show talking North Carolina politics tonight.
Yeah, I'll dig up your link and post it on Blue NC. And, folks, we ran a radio show ourselves for a while and had some good listenership, so it'll be familiar to folks, and I hope you get some traffic from it.
That sounds good. Thank you again, James.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you,
sir.
I enjoyed it. Thanks.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I guess we were good to have James on talk about North Carolina. You know, I've been trying to talk about North Carolina as soon as they got that convention because it was such a big thing. And then, of course, as we were talking about before James came on, the Larry Sabato map had them as a toss-up state, which we'll just take James as the final word on that one. But, Tim, you were discussing, for instance, Indiana. I agree with you, Tim, on that map. If Indiana is a toss-up state, the Republicans are in trouble. So I wonder if it's really a toss-up or it might should be that lightest shade of red like Missouri.
I
had about this map.
Well, yeah, I would be more willing to believe that Indiana would be that shade of red and Missouri, which was separated by, 4,000 votes, would be the shade of yellow. I'm just not following Indiana there. I guess that's the biggest question that I have about this map right now.
Yes. I mean, obviously northwestern Indiana near Gary, that's the Chicago media market. The president did much better than any Democrats ever done in that area. But you see a lot of other areas reverting to the Republican nature in the state with a lot of their congressmen. The Senate race was not close after Evan Bayh decided not to run for re-election. In Missouri, that state, once again, there's a state where the Republicans have tried to slash unemployment benefits, not accepting money that they're welcome to have from the federal government, and you would have to think there's a backlash, just like Wisconsin. I think it might be a little darker shade of blue. That was one I had a question about. And Arizona, they have as the middle shade of red. If their politics are going much like Nevada and Colorado and New Mexico, and the only reason they voted for Republicans is because their own son, John McCain, was running as the Republican nominee, you got to think that state tends to be a little more Democratic than last time, so you might could put it in that lightest shade of red.
Well, the reason you could do that, and Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, those states, it is the Hispanic population is burgeoning in those states. It is changing the political dynamic. We've seen that in recent elections. Hispanics voted heavily for President Obama, and Hispanics held and voted heavily Democratic, like for Harry Reid and again in Colorado last year. So I've got to think Arizona would be gravitating, you know, in the same general directions as those states, wouldn't you?
Yes, I'll say that, and that figures in. Catherine, now one state that did kind of is kind of tricky is New Hampshire. Larry Sabato has it as a toss-up. That's a state to me that might be nominee-dependent. If it were somebody like Mitt Romney, there's a good chance that that state goes Republican. Whereas if it's somebody that the a more intellectual Republican would deem not worthy of them, like say a Sarah Palin, just throwing out a name, even I don't think she's got a real good chance. That state
or Haley Barbour.
Democratic. Haley Barbour is hiring everybody he can up there, so he may actually have half the state on payroll, so he might just have to win one vote.
Yeah, but, you know, what how he does in the primary doesn't necessarily indicate how he does in a general.
Yeah. General, yes. But I think that is a very much nominee-dependent state. There'll be other states that well, same way.
I was going to say, thing is, in the last five presidential elections, New Hampshire has voted Republican one time, barely, for George Bush in 2000.
The first time or the second time?
Yeah, the first time.
The first time. The time where it mattered, where it would have
probably cost Gore that state.
Yeah.
So that, you know, New Hampshire, along with the whole region from Maryland on up, has been voting solidly Democratic since Bill Clinton's first run, except for New Hampshire in 2000. So I've got to wonder also, if Mitt Romney is not the Republican nominee, I'm going to say that New Hampshire will vote Democratic. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. That would be one caveat. It is four votes. I tell you what, if you know, and we've read that the Obama campaign is going to put a lot of money in Georgia. If they were somehow to win Georgia, then I have to assume that Virginia and North Carolina and Florida are all in the fold.
Mm-hmm.
That would mean that every state that touches the Atlantic Ocean, with the exception of South Carolina, votes Democratic, which would just be, you know, unfathomable, because you have the eastern seaboard, which controls so much population in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now that's a big if with Georgia, but, I mean, it's possible. I mean, South Carolina I don't see as possible, although I think we'll see more improvement in that state. But then the biggest state, in some ways, swing state now, is Florida, and I think that would be the final state we should talk about on this map. I think Rick Scott is so unpopular down there, even though it's a state race. I think Rick Scott is really doing some damage to the Republican brand in that state. And if they could re-vote him, I think he could be governor, from everything I've read. I think that helps the president as well. Although, and I said this in reaction to your post, Catherine, you know, just my thoughts and I think everybody else's comments, that's a state with a lot of seniors, and that's the president's weakest demographic group is seniors. Catherine, how do you see Florida going?
You know, I'm not very good with Florida. I'm always confused by Florida, by the voters in Florida. I tend to think that the seniors, the older voters, should be voting for Obama, and perhaps they'll put some more effort into attracting those voters. And if they do that, then we might be able to win Florida. I would imagine, it's no secret that he hasn't done as well with the seniors as he could, so hopefully they're, you know, strategizing around that, and maybe they'll have some, you know, senior-specific messaging that might help them with that population, and I certainly hope they would do that, because I think that he has much more to offer seniors than the Republicans, especially with these,
Catherine,
you know, potential. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to say, Catherine, anybody that's seen signs out of Florida like "Keep your government hands off my Medicare and Social Security" is baffled by Florida too. So
the other there's another intangible though in Florida. That's that U.S. Senate race. You know, Senator Nelson running for re-election, and the oddball thing, the oddball dynamic that's going on there, even after the recent Republican successes, is they can't find a top-tier candidate to go after him. The polling shows that one guy named Bush would beat him, who is not going to run, and any other A-list type candidate has already said, like Connie Mack, for instance, that he's not going to run. I would have to think maybe a little more is going on in Florida than we think, but it boils down to the same thing on the map, David. There's the three states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida. I still think it's going to hold that whoever wins two of those three will be president.
Yes. So this thing, we'll continue to see polls, and the map will change, I bet Larry Sabadell will do. What do you think? Six generations of this thing by this time next year.
Oh, at least.
Take the over, Tim. Yep,
oh,
so
yeah,
so take the over as well. So we'll just see. Well, changing gears maybe to be a little more policy and less political-oriented for a moment, I saw an article in Politico this week where Mike Huckabee, Fox News host, and Glenn Beck, former Fox News host, might have moved too far right for Fox News, if that's possible, disagreed. And, you know, they disagreed over the First Lady. Mike Huckabee, our favorite Republican, once again, this will be his undoing, came to defense of First Lady Obama, who's trying to keep kids healthier. Of course, some Republicans just don't like this. Catherine, what do you make of this? Is this going to be a real damage doer to Mike Huckabee? Or do you think some Republicans might say, this is just really not an issue where we need a big dividing line for the Democratic Party?
Well, I think that some rank-and-file Republicans might feel that way. The, you know, sort of the Republicans who want good government instead of the Republicans that just want Obama out of the White House or want anything, you know, where they want, you know, all they care about is not supporting anything that Obama supports. I think, you know, so like your rank-and-file Republicans who are just, you know, want to have a good government. But I think that the party will not tolerate that kind of support of anything that squeaks of supporting the Obama administration, even if it means healthier children in our country. I just think that they're so single-minded in their anti-Obama messaging that they can't filter out what is good versus what is, you know, bad for the country. As long as it's something Obama or, you know, First Lady Obama supports, it's got to be bad.
Yes. Tim, I guess George W. Bush is right. It is just so hard to put food on your family and even just food on your children in school.
Glenn Beck.
What do you make of this political issue?
Glenn Beck, there's a guy we could do a whole show about. The dude lost 39% of his viewing audience in the last year. That's why he's going off the air. He just got crazier and crazier with his rhetoric. Now, this guy said Mike Huckabee is a progressive. Now, how could he? And then he compared him to a cancer or a Nazi. And all of this just because Governor Huckabee supports Michelle Obama's childhood anti-obesity initiative. I mean, come on. Huckabee obviously was not happy, especially the part about the Nazis. That sent him over the edge. And, you know, he was right to hammer that part. And I'm glad that's going off there. Good grief. What was Fox thinking even putting somebody like that on? Man.
Well, I will say, not to morph it too much into another diatribe on Fox News, but honestly, while the guy was, you know, right wing when he was on CNN Headline News, the guy went totally crazy when he got on Fox News. Now, either A, they just took the filter off, or B, they wanted this, and I do think they want their host to be as crazy as possible. They have no journalism interest. They just want people to feed red meat to the base.
But
drive
red meat is one thing. Raw meat is one thing. But when you start with that crazy stuff, well, it gets lame after a while, and so you have to be crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier with it. And it just finally doesn't work anymore. And as we saw, his viewership collapsed on him. So, you know.
Yeah. And so now he's on his radio show attacking Mike Huckabee, whereas Mike Huckabee's probably one of the few people that independent voters might actually like on a personal level, unlike some of these teabag folks in general. And last word on this, as you look at the Politico story on the right-hand sidebar, they have an ad for Nutrisystem. So in the Huckabee-Beck fight, if you look at the advertising, score one for Huckabee, if we're using that as our judge. Well, I guess if y'all have listened to the show, and, of course, y'all co-host it with me, but the folks out there listening live, our podcast, y'all know we love to talk about transportation. At least I do, because I think it's an issue that is so talked about, but nothing's ever done about, and that's probably because for the last 8, now going on 10 years, we've had too many Republicans in control of Georgia government. There's not enough done on it, and people are losing major chunks of their life, major chunks of their parenting time, because then it gets into other issues. There's environmental concerns that all deal with transportation. Well, they ask local governments in a survey, you know, what are some transportation projects that could move major numbers of folks in your counties or from your county to the next county that you would like, and of course, what's the price tag on it? And they came for the map that had an extensive rail system that would go up into Cherokee and Bartow County, over into Rockdale County, all the way down through Clayton into Henry. When you looked at this map, and Catherine, since you're downtown living with Marta and see it in action any day you would like, which lines do you think would be the most valuable, and which ones do you think are less feasible?
I think the ones going south to Clayton and Henry, and north to up into the north are probably the ones most in demand.
I'll tell you what, Tim and I went down to the Hawks game the other night, and if this rail line would have come to Ackworth, where Cherokee County, Cobb County, and Bartow County all come together, we wouldn't have been parking in the parking lot. We'd have been getting on the train right there, one county over from where we live, on the Alabama state line. I mean, that's how I'll just say I would actually use that, but that's not necessarily the driving decision what David McLaughlin will use in Rome, Georgia. But that was a big
and
I think you're right about the Gwinnett County.
Gwinnett line, you know, Gwinnett County is one of the fastest growing areas in the country, from what I understand. So I'm sure that would be well used and helpful, and also help keep traffic in check. But I mean, I say this, but like in the last 2 days, I did go outside of the perimeter twice, so I don't usually, but I do think that the north, the 75 north area is very tough. I mean, that whole Cobb County all the way up to Kennesaw is a really tough commute. And so providing some relief in there would be very helpful. But I also think that, below the airport, there's also a lot of growth down there, and there's a lot more demand for public transportation. You know, they used to have buses in Clayton County, and they got rid of them. I don't know if they've ever come back. So I think that would be very helpful. I don't know much about this east line to Conyers. I just don't know what the demand would be for that. So it's hard for me to say.
Yeah, and I know that I was kind of shocked. If you look, there's the black existing line going out 20 west, and it doesn't even come halfway through Fulton. There was no talk of expansion out to Douglas. And you know, maybe that's not where the population growth is, but there is some, and you have Six Flags there, and a lot of times one of MARTA's biggest success strategies is, you know, being where big, you know, 20, 80,000 people gather, be it the Georgia Dome, or, of course, their Brave Shuttle's real successful. And I thought maybe somehow, you know, tying it to some type of Six Flags line might be successful. I was just surprised that there was nothing that far west. Tim, what did you think when you saw this map?
Okay, a couple of things I would like to see. Number one, I do agree with Catherine about the Gwinnett line. It would be great to run MARTA out to Gwinnett Arena, where a lot of big stars are now performing. Not only there, but maybe on just a couple of miles further down the road to the Mall of Georgia. The other thing that I think is very interesting that I wish they would consider is that line from East Point down to Macon is the cheapest one of the lines listed, for one thing. And another thing, I'd like for them to turn that line around and run it up to Ackworth, because really someday I would love to see a rail line from Macon to Atlanta to Chattanooga.
Yeah.
You know, following I-75, I think that would be such an important development for Georgia. I really do think, especially with the price of gasoline and things like that, that rail would be the way of the future for commuters. Other countries have proved this. It's a shame that the fastest bullet train in the world is in China, and that we're helping to pay for it, and that we don't try to do the same here. So, you know,
yeah,
that's where I'm at.
Yeah, and obviously bullet trains run on a little bit different technology than airplanes. And, you know, if you're might say, hey, I need to fly to Memphis, Tennessee, but a high-speed train might be a good option instead of flying, and then would be another way to cut costs.
Well, let me ask you something. When we left Rome the other night, would you not have loved to have parked the car in Cartersville and jumped on the train and run on down to Atlanta to see the ball game? I mean, a lot of people would love to do things like that.
Yeah, and it just seems, you know, it seems like they need to pick one of these projects and say, look, let's go ahead and build one of these and see how successful it is. And you're right about the one. Now, the one tricky one, the one going through Clayton County, obviously, if it were just $156 million, by far that's the best one to do, because it's just a tenth of the cost of the other ones. But it says, if other regions also approve their segments of the line. So I don't know what that cost me. That cost maybe another $750 million, and that throws the math off.
That's the thing I don't like about this. What if say, Cobb and Bartow approve, you know, the rail line and the little piece of Cherokee that it goes through, the voters in Cherokee, could nix the thing. I don't think that's such a good idea.
Yeah, because one company or one area may approve it and another one might not, and then you have pieces of rail lines, and then people would point to it, oh, it's the rail line to nowhere, and then criticize, you know, mass transit in general when it's not a fair estimate. So it's something to look at. One thing I didn't put on the topic list but wanted to share with you, because I saw this map, I actually reached out to the people at Georgians for Better Transportation and found out that that group does not even exist in a fully functioning form anymore. They just went on hiatus at the end of 2010. I didn't even know that. Did y'all even know that the main lobby for transportation projects throughout the state is no longer even surviving? And they had a Republican as their head. And if they can't make it lobbying Republicans, two Republicans, what chance does transportation have, y'all think?
Not much.
Other than just get stuck behind a bunch of semis on the interstate.
Right.
'Cause, you know, that's one of the favorite modes right now.
Catherine,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question. This map talks some about streetcars in Atlanta. Do you have any idea of the status of those things? I mean, if that's a go or...
There was supposed to be a streetcar line. I think it all got approved. Unfortunately, it's got kind of a crazy route, if I remember. It basically goes from downtown to the King Memorial site, which is great because that's a really common, a popular tourist attraction, and it, mm-hmm. you know, it helps connect like Centennial Olympic Park with the King Center and the and Ebenezer. So that's, you know, that's a good thing. But it seems like there was something funny about the route, like it. I wish I could remember. I'll have to look it up and maybe we can talk about it again sometime. But there was something funny about it. Like it didn't really offer much opportunity to do anything between the two places. You know, it wasn't like like I don't know if you've ever been to San Francisco, but in San Francisco when you get on the streetcar, you can like it goes all over. And so you get on a streetcar and you stop a block later and you say, oh, I'm going to go, you know, over here and have lunch. And then I'm going to get back on the streetcar and go down to Fisherman's Wharf or whatever you want to go. So, and it seemed like the streetcar line that was presented didn't really give that kind of opportunity. It was more like get on it and take it all the way down to the King Center, get back on it and go back. You know, there wasn't a lot of opportunity to stop in between, which seemed sort of contrary to what I think of a streetcar, but, you know, that's me.
But it is a go.
I believe it's a go, yes. Mm-hmm. I think Mayor Reed got all that funding with the help of the legislature. But you know what? I'll do some homework on that, and I can fill you in next week.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah, David, you can talk too, buddy.
Oh, I know. I like it when y'all talk. It takes the burden off of me. So that's not a bad thing. So let's go ahead and move on to some topics. One that I had no idea was even going on. Did y'all even know that Bob Corker was even considering running for president? This is Tennessee Junior Senator Bob Corker. I'm sorry, running for the White House. I didn't even know he was looking at it, John.
No, he's not. I have to wonder if his staff didn't start this presidential talk because of the fact that, you know, his reelection is coming up next year, right? To the Senate. Didn't he get elected in 06? Yeah. Don't you think that's what it's all about? They can talk about, oh, it's been rumored that Bob Corker might be presidential timber, and it all makes sense because here's what Bob Corker has done since he's been in the Senate, and what do you have, guys? You have your first campaign commercial in the can right there.
I care too much about Tennessee to leave you.
There we
too
go.
Much good work.
I mean,
yep, I see what
beautiful.
You're saying, Tim.
I
that's a smart angle,
better, David.
but honestly, you know, the idea of him running, it makes some of their other characters like Haley Barbour look realistic. Because obviously, I just don't see where this guy would have the gravitas at this point to pull this off. And honestly, I mean, the guy probably the thing he's best known for is the fact that he had a half-naked lady in a campaign ad when he won for Senate. I mean, Catherine, when you think of Bob Corker, is that not one of the first things that comes to mind, is that ad he ran against Harold Ford that was so controversial?
Yeah. But that's me. Us. We're Democrats. We're not going to vote for him anyway.
Yeah.
I think the first thing that comes to people who voted for him is he beat Harold Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I just know that that's
and
one thing.
If he can beat Harold Ford, if he can beat Harold Ford, maybe he can beat President Obama. I mean, there's a lot of Obama there, you know.
But realistically, don't you think that the angle I mentioned is more than likely what's going on?
Yes, I like it. I think that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, me too.
Or he wants to be, you know, like secretary of something. So he,
that's,
you know, I think there's a lot of that lining up. You know, people who really want some other kind of job, but they're, you know, throwing their hat in the ring so that they can be in line for whether it's vice president or secretary of defense or, you know, whatever, secretary of state, whatever.
Oh, Catherine, now you've thrown out state and defense. I was going to make Bob Corker a promise. If you won't run for re-election in Senate, make that open seat, I'll make you secretary of something.
But, you know, we'll have to figure out what that'd be. But now you're promising him state and defense, and we can't necessarily pull that off. So
agriculture
off the table. Well, I mean, no, you said something. I mean, you know, I wasn't talking a cabinet job. You know, I was going to make him secretary of my trash can or something, you know.
Yeah, but you see, David, you know. Catherine has a good angle, too. You mention one office, one all the time. You're putting feelers out that what you're really interested in is this other office.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
And
well,
then when
you're doing the... Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No,
well,
he could be doing the whole...
when you don't get the nomination, then you're like, oh, well, it's okay. I will, you know, I'll be happy if I can be in the cabinet. And then everybody thinks, oh, he's such a good guy. He's so, you know, he's so collegiate. He, you know, works with his colleagues so well. When all along, that's what he wanted anyway.
Yeah, or even vice presidential nomination, because, of course, that's what everybody says Haley Barbour's running for. Even though, moving to our next topic, people expect by this time next week, Haley Barbour will be an official candidate for president. He's actually going to do this. At least, I'll say this, at least he's jumping off the diving board, unlike some of his cohorts. Tim, are you thinking he's getting in too early or just right?
Well, I've been wondering when somebody was going to get in. And the reason I think he's going to go ahead and jump is money. Money, obviously, is how the serious candidates separate themselves from the pretenders. And some of these guys have got a lot of money to raise. If they're an official candidate, you know, they feel that they can raise it faster. Plus, they're going to be facing a president who may have as much as $1 billion to spend. So I think his announcement is all about one thing. I think he wants to be the second official candidate because our good buddy Herman Cain is already in the race. But I think it's all about raising money to Haley Barbour, and I think he's got to be an announced candidate to try to get some.
Yeah, I think you're right about getting into the money. And, Tim, you just eating all that Godfather's pizza, getting ideas like that. Catherine, what do you think? Is Haley Barbour getting in too soon or just right?
Oh, I think Tim's got it right on the money. I think he's getting in there to try to raise money and raise his visibility, but I don't think it's going to work for him.
Me either.
Yeah, and if that, and as a side effect, he'll maybe get better Google search topics. Maybe it'll be Haley Barbour gets in a presidential race instead of Haley Barbour racial angle of the week. So maybe that'll be a side benefit that he can't mention. Well, final topic, talking about raising money. Kentucky, obviously a very Republican state in national politics, but the governorship is Democratic. Even though they elect a Rand Paul, Steve Beshear has got pretty good poll numbers and even better fundraising numbers when you compare that to his Republican a possible opponent. Tim, are you surprised at the gap here, or is this just the nature of incumbency?
No, Governor Beshear, from everything that I can read and hear, is a pretty popular governor. He's done very well in Kentucky. You know, we're reading in this article that Governor O'Malley is going there to speak, you know, at their premier event in the state. I don't think that's any accident. I think that is the final piece of the puzzle that Governor Beshear will need is a high-profile visitor like that. And I think he's going to be reelected. I feel good about
Catherine,
that.
Catherine, how do we get us? Yeah, how did we get us one of these guys in Georgia, or maybe the governor Beebe in Arkansas, our popular Democrat in the southern state?
Well, I'll tell you one thing everybody who's listening should do is go to GeorgiaDemocrat.org and join the Yellow Dog Club and make a monthly contribution, no matter how small, to help us do exactly that.
Yep, and you can't drive the coal without, I mean, the train without the coal, and that's what money
yeah,
is in politics.
All right. Okay, Calvin.
Yeah. Well, it's true. He's some truisms. Well, guys, I tell you what. I hope we've gotten better in the past 4 years. And if you want to judge, you can scroll all the way to the bottom and listen to the first show back in 2007. But we'll be back next week on the Kudzu Vine. Great show, guys.
Thanks, guys. Good night.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that bird.